I was thinking all week, if the saying, opposites attract, hold true, it can never be more true than in the area of communication. In fact, I'm going to explain what I mean in a minute. Because I think the majority of marriages, if you look at it carefully, you'll find that the statement is true. You'll see that when one is a spendthrift, the other one is not. When one gets cold at 80 degree temperature, the other one is boiling at 50 degree temperature. When one is verbal, the other is not. And when it comes to communication, you find that when one wants to express their thought verbally and in words, the other one clamps up. I've seen it in the tests and the many tests that I've done through the years of newly or to be married couples. But probably this one trait of communication, one issue that is the cause of a great deal of heartburn in marriages. In other words, communications can make or break a marriage. We looked at the three-legged stool. We saw that in selflessness, it takes maturity, it takes malleability, and it takes magnanimity. And we saw in forgiveness that it is important to attack the insignificant and to arrest the incompatible and to take your identity very seriously. And so we come to this last in the three-legged stool, and so come to this, what I call communication, but in reality, I want to make a confession to you. A confession is that I just don't like the term communication. I don't like the word, personally, because it's overused, and I've just used it today, and I use it all the time. But it is overused. In fact, the word communication, the reason I don't like it is because it gives the impression that one person is speaking and the other one is receiving information. But I prefer the word conversation, because conversation gives the idea of an exchange, of give and take, speak and listen, both at the same time. And so I prefer the word conversation instead of communication, and I'll use that throughout this message. In fact, if you study carefully the number of blessed marriages, you're going to find that they have good conversation. Not that one dictates and the other one listens, or one speaks and the other one listens, no. But both expend energy in listening. They expend energy in speaking and the choice of words that they speak. In fact, I tell you another confession. I find myself to be thoroughly exhausted, more tired listening than speaking. Thank God for that, because I make my living speaking. So I don't get as tired speaking as I do listening. And some people exert energy in listening, and I think that is important. By the same token, if you survey the causes of marriage breakdowns, you will discover that conversations at some point have come to a complete breakdown. Now, to be sure, there are issues for breakdown, such as infidelity and all the other things that causes a marriage to fall apart or break down. But in most cases, you're going to discover that the reason stems from lack of conversation, of exchange, of ideas, back and forth. Poor communication, so poor conversation. It's like the man who said, last night, my wife and I had words, but unfortunately, I didn't get to use mine. In fact, I read not so long ago about the wife who was really trying to get the conversation going with her husband. I mean, she was struggling, and no matter what she says, and he says, so she's trying to be creative, and finally she said to him, she said, Bruce, do you think my hair is the prettiest hair that you've ever seen? He said, do you think that I have a perfect figure? He said, you bet. She said, do you think my lips are like rubies? He said, sure. Do you think that my teeth are like pearls? He said, I'll say. And then she said to him, she said, oh, Bruce, you say the nicest things. But I want to get quickly to some of the things that hinders intimacy in marriage, particularly among young couples. If you are aspiring to be married or you are married, young moms and young dads, I want you to listen very carefully. I could come up with a long list of things that play a role in hindering intimate conversation between a husband and wife. But from our own personal experience, I want to share with you three things that can truly be a major problem and hindrance to meaningful intimate conversation. And I got them all in the letter C so you can remember them again. First, calendar. Secondly, children. And thirdly, can you guess it? Conflict. Calendar, children, and conflict. When you look at the average family calendar, it is overwhelming. It really is. I mean, we have wall-to-wall schedules of all sorts of activities of running around. From long hours at work, to social life, to running around, running errands, to driving kids everywhere. And there seem to be no end to it. In fact, a recent poll have indicated that 61% of Americans have said that they would trade money for time. That's incredible when you think about it. And we are stretched to the limit. We are running around thinking that we're confusing activities and busyness with communication. And all of this running around leaves very little time, very precious little time for meaningful conversation between a husband and wife. Many marriages appear healthy and happy on the outside simply because the husband and wife do not conversate anymore, do not talk. And we have confused activities, we have confused busyness with happiness. But here's the problem. Many couples find themselves drained energy-wise from running around and doing all that they're supposed to do. They find themselves emotionally spent, emotionally exhausted, without any specific time out to focus on each other, without a specific designated time for unhampered conversation with each other, without a specific time for listening and speaking, without specific time where active exchange of ideas and exchange of thoughts and exchange of feelings take place, without a specific time for uninterrupted focused time on each other. But the truth is, without a healthy conversation, there can be no healthy marriage. And that is why it is the third in the three-legged stool. And by conversation, I don't mean chattering and yakking and talking all the time. There are many ways that a conversation can take place, not with words. I'm going to come to that back later on in the message. But the calendar seems to get clogged and clogs our time for meaningful conversation with one another. But not only calendar, secondly, children. Now, I don't want you to misunderstand what I'm going to tell you, especially kids who are listening. I hope that you're listening very, very carefully, because I believe the Lord has a word for the children as well as for mom and dad. As you can't be around me for very long and my wife without recognizing that we absolutely love and adore children. Our grown children know that we not only valued them, we value them, we always value them as very, very special. Without a doubt, in my mind at least, children are the most important result of intimacy in marriage. But the truth is this, small children can, and here's the operative word here, they can be the biggest hindrance to intimacy in marriage. Children bring a great blessing to the marriage. I can't think what our life would be without them. And yet they also bring the greatest responsibility in marriage. And for the first 18 years of their lives at least, they are totally dependent on mom and dad. They are dependent for support. They are dependent for sustenance. They are totally dependent. But many parents, including yours truly, listen carefully, including us, make the mistake of thinking that children come first in a marriage relationship. Kids are innocent. And they do not know their proper role unless they hear it and taught it by their parents. And they're going to be taught it by their pastor today. You see, Kids need to be taught that they are not number one. But if you make them to be number one, they won't know any difference. They can't sit and analyze. They can't figure it out. They're going to think they're number one. But secure children, listen to me, kids who are secure and grow up to be secure adults, they need to be taught that they are not number one, but mommy's number one priority in her life is daddy. And daddy's number one priority in life is mommy. And that gives them a sense of security like you can never impart on them without having to teach them this. Unfortunately, of course, some parents allow their children to be the decision makers in the home. I remember many years ago, Billy Graham was telling a story about how the younger generation, that many years ago, can you think about, I wonder what he thinks now, but that many years ago, how children running the households. And he told the story about a salesman who came in the door and knocked on the door, and a seven-year-old boy opened the door, and the salesman looked at him and said, I want to speak to the master of the house. And the little boy said, you are talking to him. And the reason probably why Elizabeth and I are going to take a little time today and talk about children and when they are misunderstanding and misplaced in their understanding of the relationship is a common mistake between husband and wife is because it is very, very important and because we have made that mistake and we're going to share from our mistake. You see, I even hear parents today say, you know, we want to do what our children want to do. We want to go where our children want to go. We want to focus all of our attention on our children. In a minute, Elizabeth is going to come up and is going to tell you how we've made that mistake and how the Lord, through His grace, through His mercy, that He taught us and He forgave us. And then He turned us around back in the early 80s when our children were small and we desired to be good parents. And who doesn't want to be a good parent? I've not met anyone who says, I don't want to be a good parent. We want to be good parents. But wanting to be a good parent has made us take away our eyes and our attention from our relationship with each other and focus on the children. Now, you got to understand, taking care of children is of uttermost importance. Don't misunderstand me and go out and say, well, Michael said don't take care of your children. I'm not saying that, not for a minute. You know, when you think about them as helpless babies or when they're in elementary school and they need help with homework or when they're going through these tough teen years and they need the wisdom that can come from a loving parent, all of that takes time from the spouses. And the question is how to create that balance. How to create that balance. And I know my wife is a much better person when it comes to that balance. So I'm going to ask her if she would come up and take a few moments and just share a testimony that I pray and she prays that will be an encouragement and help for young moms. And I'm going to have a word for grandmoms and dads too and I'll come back.
Really, I want to address the younger moms, but I'm sure I'm going to end up addressing moms of all ages. In the early 1980s, with three children between the ages of 4 and 7, you know, Michael and I found ourselves really in the midst of a really hectic schedule. At that point in our lives, he was taking several long overseas trips in conjunction with his work. And, of course, during that time, I was busy kind of keeping the wheels and the family kind of going. And I did all of those usual things that most of the young mothers are doing, you know, juggling the carpool, the laundry, the meal preparation, supervising homework and after-school activities. Now, I was not homeschooling. I have every admiration for you homeschooling mums. But still, I was really busy. Let me say that I was a far from perfect mum. I've got two witnesses here today. Who know that, you know, I was guilty always of losing that, you know, sock, the ubiquitous sock, to the sock-eating washing machine and leaving them in the bathtub so long that their skin shriveled. But the saying goes that the squeaky wheel is the one that gets the attention. And, you know, for me, it was my children. Now, it was not to say that they demanded the attention. But, you know, over a period of time, I found that I had focused all my attention on them. And, you know, this didn't happen overnight. You know, when I think about it, I realize it started way back, and so it happened gradually. You know, you talk about that little moving away from the plumb line, and it happens just over a period of time. It was not until we had reached a crisis point in our marriage that our loving and wonderful Lord, in his mercy and in all his graciousness, revealed to both of us that we had failed to recognize the absolute necessity of building up communication, conversation with each other. We were impressed with the thought that we had to take some radical steps, and this was from the Lord. From that time on, we purposed in our hearts, not in the flesh, but in the strength of the Holy Spirit, to set aside time each week to build our relationship and also to have two or three occasions with away alone time. You know, it's so easy to fall into this pattern of life or into this way of thinking. You know, as a mother, you know you're responsible for the basic, for meeting those basic needs of your children, and that is right. But the problem arises when you place this above what should be your first priority, which is meaningful conversation with your mate. You know, it's Satan's oldest trick, isn't it? It's the oldest trick in the book. He uses something which is perfectly natural and perfectly wonderful, that is a mother or a father's relationship with their children, but he turns it for evil purposes. And, you know, my prayer is for all of you young mums, and maybe for some of the older mums, that you will be aware of these pitfalls and that you will guard against them, but that you will call upon the Lord to strengthen you to carry out what you've purposed in your heart and that you will do what is right. Thanks.
You know, there are many problems that will arise as a result of not making your mate to be your number one priority. You know, the problem that arises between husband and wives when their conversation is not focused on each other is that when kids leave home, they will literally have nothing in common. I have seen it again and again as they feel that there is nothing to talk about because the kids were the focus of their attention. The kids were the subject of their planning. The kids were the subject of their time and energy. And then they have nothing left between them. And so when they hit the empty nest syndrome, they discover that they have nothing in common. I got to tell you something. Because of the grace of God, and we're able to discover that early in our marriage, I love our children and they'll tell you that, but when we hit the empty nest syndrome, it was wonderful. But I have seen it, and I've seen it again and again, face a severe crisis when the kids leave home. And that is why Elizabeth said that we often share with young moms and young dads that it is a must for them to spend time alone together without their children several times a year and a shorter time once a week. And when they go away and the conversation begins to veer toward the children, stop, change the subject. Don't talk about the kids. Talk about something of interest to both of you, and soon you'll discover that you are developing something in common between just the two of you. Listen, I know when kids were small and we would get away, I'm going to tell you something, and saying goodbye, they will cry their little eyes out. But I promise you, the babysitters used to tell us, as soon as we turned the corner, they forgot all about us. Now, we've learned this the hard way, and we also learned that kids do need a break from mom and dad. They really do. And I'm sure some of you probably say, well, I don't believe that. I don't know whether this is really true. I want to tell something to grandparents. I got news for you. When my kids start producing children, they aren't going to get any gifts from me. The only gifts they're going to get is gift certificate for babysitting. So that's a gift that you can give to your children and to babysit their children. And furthermore, when you come back, your kids really appreciate you more. So it's calendar, it's children, Thirdly, conflict. What do I mean by conflict? More closely, I want to talk about fear of conflict. I've heard this fallacy many times, and I'm sure you have too. It is one of the greatest fallacy that good marriages do not have conflicts, or that conflicts in marriage is bad. Who said so? Conflict is part and parcel of being married. Conflict is neutral. If you handle conflict wisely, it can lead to greater intimacy. But if you handle conflict foolishly, it can lead to further isolation. And I can tell you with some certainty that if a husband and wife have never had any conflict, chances are they do not have healthy conversation. They do not have healthy communication. But if you make conflict to be your ally instead of your enemy, you can both learn a great deal from conflict. I want you to hear me right on this one. I don't want you to misunderstand me. In most conflict avoidance situations, you're going to find that one or both are stuffing their hurts, they're stuffing their feelings, they're stuffing their emotions into a very internal, deep sock. And the problem with stuffing is that one day the consequences, whether it be mental or emotional or even physical, is going to be disastrous. So what's the answer? First, learn how your spouse is wired. Often you find that one spouse is a problem solver, want to solve all conflicts very quickly and move on, and the other one doesn't want to talk about it. So, how do you solve a problem? Three things. Number one, both should agree on identifying the area of conflict. Secondly, they must discuss how they should deal with that area of conflict. And thirdly, develop a mutually agreed upon procedure to resolve the area of conflict every time it happens. And oh, before you get to this point, you need to spend time in prayer. But I want to tell you something. Some people say, oh, we pray, but they don't. I want you to listen to what I'm going to say about prayer. Are you ready to listen? You begin your prayer with a confession of your sin, not your spouse's sin, your sin. Hey, Lord, forgive him, forgive her. No. Lord, forgive me. Prayer is to be a prayer of surrendering of your agenda, not your spouse's agenda, your agenda. A prayer that God may reveal to each of you your own inadequacies, your own weaknesses, your own failures. And finally, that prayer is for the Lord to pour his love into each of your heart, that you would love one another with the love of Christ. I'm sure somebody here today probably saying, well, Michael, you don't understand. Conversation does not exist in my marriage. We have stopped conversing long time ago. I don't care where you are at this point in your relationship. It doesn't matter really, because I believe in the God of the impossible. I believe in the God who can jump start your conversation any time and any moment you come and ask him to. Begin to think of those romantic times that you had when you were dating. Begin to think about the moments, of those tender moments of your earlier years in marriage. And then try to make some strange sounding words like telling your mates that he or she is God's gift to you. Say things like, I love you and adore you. Above all, don't forget there are 100 other ways by which you can have a conversation that might not be in words. Nonverbal conversation can be just as important. And conversation can take place through a smile. A conversation can take place through an adoring look. There are hundreds of ways, and you can say, I love you. Hundreds of ways. And finally, if you have never read Gary Chapman's book, Five Love Languages, get it, read it. And then find out what is your spouse's language, love language, and then speak that language and practice that language and learn that language. After all, that's what Jesus Christ, the Son of God, has done. He could have looked from heaven and says, I love you. But no, he knew our love language. He understood that he has to converse with us, he has to communicate with us in our love language. The God of very God became a man. Just think about that. I can't even understand it. I can't comprehend it. And I'll never comprehend it until I get to heaven. And then knowing that the wages of our sin is eternal death, eternal damnation, eternal suffering, and the wages are dependent on Him dying on a cross for us. Here He is, the perfect, sinless Son of God. God of very God stretches His arms and dies to pay the wages of your sins and mine. And still, even today, every time we feel alone, every time we feel rejected, every time we feel discouraged, every time we feel unappreciated, He tells us in 1,000 different ways in His Word, I love you. I care for you. My everlasting arms are underneath you. My plans for you are for good and not for evil. You are engraved on the palms of my hands. I am carrying you on my shoulders. And he who touches you touches the apple of my eye. That is the love language that the Lord Jesus Christ communicated with us. Human beings, full of failures, full of forgetfulness. And he says, I love you.
Thanks for listening to this message from Dr. Michael Youssef, recently featured on Leading the Way. If you'd like to know more about us, please visit ltw.org. That's ltw.org.